Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 40 of the Going Deeper podcast. My name is JD, and I'll be your host today. Together with me this morning are Jeff.
Good morning.
And Adam.
Good morning.
And we are in the midst of a challenging series that we are calling Go Radically. And right now here at G&G, we're studying the book Radical by David Platt and working through a church-wide life group study on that same book and some of the lessons that David Platt taught. And we also are teaching some concurrent lessons on similar topics. And so so we are excited to be talking about this podcast with you. We want to just kind of own that last week we did not record a podcast for you guys, and wanted to kind of explain just briefly what that was all about. Last week, Adam was on vacation, so he was out hanging out with his family, and Dad and I were at the Creation Museum for an Answers for Pastors conference. So, Dad, why don't you give them just a brief like heads up about what that was and what we experienced last week while we were down in Northern Kentucky.
Well, this is, I think, our second or third year.
Second time.
Second year of going.
Second time at that conference. We went to the World Religions Conference.
That's correct.
This is our third conference with Answers in Genesis, but our second pastor's conference.
The Answers in Genesis ministry, which is really the ministry that runs the Creation Museum, just does an outstanding job of presenting biblical truth, and they are very focused on the Word of God from Genesis 1 to the end of Revelation. And so each year they do a Answers for Pastors conference, and in this particular conference, they really push you to examine the Scripture and to look at exactly what it says, to read it for what it says, and to understand that it is in fact God's Word. And so this year we got to hear a fairly famous pastor by the name of John MacArthur. He came in from California to teach at this particular conference, and it was just a really good trying to think of the right word to say here. It was a really good learning experience for JD and I. And I think this is one we'll probably continue to go back to. And I would recommend this resource for anybody here within the sound of our voices, because we have the Creation Museum and we also have the Ark exhibit located not that far from us. And so I would encourage everybody to take advantage of these opportunities, because these are state-of-the-art exhibits.
Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting things that you brought up was their emphasis this particular year on the foundation that Genesis provides for the rest of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And that scrapping big pieces of it from a historical perspective, or just acting like, oh, well, that didn't happen, or, that's not history or whatever, really challenges you when you get to later parts of the Bible where you're talking about Jesus and other things, because the reality is Jesus referenced that as history, and Jesus referenced those things as being the foreshadowing of him. And mm-hmm. And if you start whittling away at that biblical foundation, you end up cutting out a whole lot.
Yeah, and I thought one of the things that they really delved into is the fact that in the first 11 chapters of Genesis, you really find the answer to many of the questions our culture is grappling with today.
Right.
Everything from gender roles and marriage, the racial tension that we see going on today.
Right.
All those things are really, if you go back to Genesis, you see biblical answers for those kinds of issues.
Right. Now, speaking of reading the Bible for what it says, this series in particular, I think, has really touched a nerve for a lot of us. As we've gone through this, we've received numerous communication cards, and I know in my own life group we've had lots of comments and really, you know, interesting discussion that surrounds the teaching that we've been doing and the stuff that's in the Radical Life Group study from David Platt. And I kind of want to ask the question: why do you guys think that this lesson series is kind of touching such a nerve for Christians? Why do these words that we all know have been sitting there for 2,000 years and that haven't really changed at all? Why do they seem so crazy and difficult now?
Yeah, I think a big thing is just simply that complacency is comfortable. That it's very easy for us to, you know, show up on Sundays and then do the normal, you know, like I put this in quotes, Christian thing, you know, and that if we're called to anything more, it creates that discomfort. And I think as well as we fill our lives so much, like we fill our lives with tons of stuff, especially in today's culture. Everyone is busy constantly, right, and they fill their lives. And if we're asking them to take a step further and do a little more, it creates almost like an overwhelming sense in our minds, I think. So basically what I'm saying is we've got our priorities out of whack. Right. And so I think the combination of complacency and kind of messed up priorities, I think, it really causes us to panic a little bit when we're called to something more.
And to some degree, or we're called back to that which is most basic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's
you know,
true,
like,
yeah.
You know, like, oh, wait, what do you mean? Return to
yeah.
this simple, pretty clear view of what the gospel says is following Jesus.
Yeah. I think another aspect to that is, you know, Jesus is referred to as the Lion of Judah. And I really believe that many of us want to tame that lion. We don't want him to really be a lion. In fact, I think a lot of us are lion tamers because we look at what he says and we come up with explanations. Well, that's not really what he meant. Like in the story of the rich young ruler, well, he didn't really mean to give everything up. He didn't really mean to sell everything and give to the poor. He didn't really mean, and we do that with a lot of the different things he said. And I think that's why this lesson series is so challenging, is because it does push us to stop taming the lion and to accept him as our master, and then we're the followers. I think, you know, in that first life group video that we did, where he says, hate your father and mother, and you know, that those kind of words are just jarring to us.
Right.
And that's understandable, but by the same token, he's saying, don't put anybody else before me.
Right.
Well, most of us do. That's reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we look at what he says and we're called back to actually radically follow him, that's disconcerting for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true for all of us. You know, we've all got to, I think that's the beauty of this lesson series and this study, is it really forces us to look in the mirror in a hard way.
You know, it was funny. I asked this question in my life group last Friday night. We're all kind of sitting around a circle after watching the video, and I just asked him, guys, why does this sound so crazy? Like, why do we look at this and go, this is nuts, you know? And why do we experience this as having such a heavy hand on us right now? And you know, it was funny. I got an email that I'll reference again here in a minute from somebody recently that said, you know, this stuff's really messing with me, right? And one of the comments that one of the people in my life group made, and I thought she was dead on. She was like, "We sugarcoat this stuff."
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I thought she was dead on. She was like, "I've never heard it taught And she's like, I've been around church for a while. And she's like, I've never heard it taught that you actually had to do this stuff. You know, it's like, I mean, when we think about that, that's kind of nuts. Yeah. It really is. It's kind of nuts that you know, we can grow up in church culture and never actually take seriously the words Jesus said. Mm-hmm. I mean, how did we get here?
Yeah. I mean, this doesn't necessarily answer that question, but it's just a thought that I'm having. Is because maybe people just need to simply hear it, like it, based on what you even just said there, and conversations I've had in the past with friends or with family or with students or things like that, is this is not optional,
right?
Like it's not what it says in Scripture. We are called to do,
right?
It's not an option. If we call ourselves Christ followers and we truly believe in Him and have decided to give our lives over to Him, then we are called to do it.
Right.
Not just simply hear it, not just simply move on. Yeah. We are called to put it into action.
Truly put it first.
Yeah, it's just like the Sermon on the Mount that we've talked about before. Like the guy who listens and then builds his house on solid rock, you know, and then when the storms come, he withstands it, you know. But
right.
The person who listens and doesn't do anything with it, builds it on sand when the storms come, it's knocked down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's talking about that's not just simply talking about an actual storm and actual houses. That's talking about us building up our faith, putting it into practice. And so when hard times or challenges or different things like that come, we know how to deal with it. And we're not called to simply stand by. We're called to do.
Right.
So it's, yeah, I just, I don't know. That's just a thought I had, this is not an option.
Right.
Doesn't really answer your question, but
no.
Well, I think, you know, when you ask, how do we get here? I think it's because that's where we want to be. I mean, we're fallen people.
Mm.
And so our natural tendency is to try and tame the lion and not really follow what He's called us to do and to be. And so I think, you know, Paul talks about that in the King James Version. There is a war in my members. And he's talking about that inner struggle that we all experience when God calls us to do something
mm-hmm.
that we really don't want to do.
Right.
And so I think that's part of the Christian life, is that struggle, to not tame the lion, to follow where He leads and to let Him tell us how to live. That's, I think there's always going to be some friction in that for every honest follower of Christ.
Right. And I think to some degree, I mean, you're right. We, as churches, you know, for decades, we have driven more and more toward, you know, social teaching, toward, you know, here's how you have a better marriage. Here's how you have raise better kids. Here's how you do this or that. And that's that kind of teaching is all well and good.
I mean, there's
certainly, you know, here's how you handle your finances. Here's, you know, all of those things are good and helpful and should be taught about.
Mm-hmm.
All of that comes under the overarching category of the supremacy of Christ.
Right.
You put Jesus first and everything else will kind of, you'll learn on the way how to do better with the other things. If you try to just be a better dad or a better husband or a better manager of your finances and never submit your will to Christ, you're going to struggle hardcore.
Sure.
All the way across, and we'll find, you know, little of that joy and freedom coming with it.
Well, it's all about lordship. Really,
right.
The bottom line, it's lordship. Whether it's how you steward your finances or how you lead your family or whatever, it's always a lordship issue. And you know, and it's the same with sin in your life. I mean, it's about who do you follow? Do you follow Christ or do you follow yourself?
Mm-hmm.
It's real simple.
Now, Dad, since we did have to miss the podcast last week, we didn't have a chance to talk really about your lesson, Radical Grace, from a couple weeks ago. Was there anything from that that you would like to kind of just jump back into briefly and talk about from that particular lesson?
Well, that, that was a difficult lesson, because I think that any time you begin to talk about God's holiness and God's justice, those are topics that make us all very uncomfortable, because they shine a light on how far we fall. Paul said, we've for all have sinned and fallen short of God's glorious standard, and I think we don't really want to think about that. We don't want to accept that. And so when we talked in that lesson about God's holiness and God's justice, and we even used the word wrath at one point, and people don't like to think that about God. We much prefer the God of love and the God who is quick to forgive, and for many of us, we really kind of think that our sins are not that big a deal,
right?
Not that important, God's not even going to notice, that kind of thing. And then when you start talking about the holiness of God, the absolute purity and perfection of God, and that the reality is that our sin is worthy of punishment, right. And Paul says that the wages of sin is death. We struggle to accept that. We think that's only for big time sinners or people that commit acts of genocide or something awful. But that's not me. I don't really deserve that. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. We've all seen the picture of the guy that Jesus is holding up, and he's got a nail and a hammer in his hand, and we see that. But we don't really like to think that Jesus would have had to die if I was the only one. Mm-hmm. Because my sins aren't that big a deal. And yet when we look at Scripture, we see that Jesus didn't just die to keep us out of hell. He died to save us from God's justice.
Right.
And that's a reality that will stop you in your tracks.
Yeah.
Or should.
Should. Now, that was really kind of the walk away point from Radical Grace. And then this week we swung over to the parable of the talents and talked about the idea that as servants, in the story of the parable of the talents, we've all been invested in by God to some degree or another. All of us have received some investment from Him, whether it's it's time and life, it's money and abilities, it's family members, it's friends, it's experiences and opportunities. God has invested in all of us. And the challenge as we walked through that lesson was to deal with a couple of things. Number one, that idea that we're not all talented the same way, and Jesus fairly certain in that story that not all received the same level of talent or gifting or investment or input from God. That's a difficult thing for our culture to wrestle with. Why do you guys think so?
Well, I mean, that's just kind of I think first of all, it's the nature of our culture right now. Across the board, everyone is saying, equality about everything.
Right.
And that's been going on for quite some time now. I mean, mm-hmm. I can say most of my adult and even high school and junior high life, that's the message that I've been hearing is that we are all equal. And so pushing back against that, it makes us uncomfortable. It's like, oof, that'll get you in trouble in the political world,
right.
Like, And so, I mean, you think about it, if anybody today shares their opinion that's differing, they get crushed, you know? And so when we're saying something that seems to be, you know, combating what the political world is saying, then that touches a nerve with people. And right. So it's, and I think if you look at it even from a different standpoint, like you, Jeff, you were just mentioning that, we love to think of God as like the God of love and like it's all, you know, rainbows and glitter and you know, roses and everything. Right. It's like, well, then certainly he would make us all exactly equal, you know? And right. I think it's just, it's a reality of who God is that we've never really like delved into, I guess. And so it, you know, even coming out of it, I was thinking about that a little bit and as you were saying it from the stage, I'm like, yeah, like that's right on. But then I kept asking myself, and how do we explain, and this is a question for you guys that I'd like to know what you guys think of, is how do we explain those who seemingly do have a lot, but we're like, we know they're not living for the Lord and using it for the Lord. So why do they have a lot? Mm-hmm. Like whether it's financially or maybe it's their gifting, you know, whatever it might be, like how do we explain that? I came out of it just kind of thinking through that of, I'm like, I agree with this, but how do I explain that?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that's jumping to mind right now for me is certainly anything can be an input from God. So you're talking like, you know, for instance, a LeBron James, right? Fabulous athletic ability. And in this particular culture, therefore, the ability to make loads and loads and loads of money, right?
Absurd amount, yeah.
One of the things that we have to be very careful about is that we overvalue what our culture values versus what God values. So, for example, whereas we may look at somebody in that kind of particular situation and go, well, obviously God, he's a five talent person, and why isn't he using his five talents for God? Well, we don't know the nature of his heart and soul. We don't know what he's doing with his talents, so to speak. But we also need to be really careful that we don't look at money and athletic ability or super intelligence as the kinds of talents that are most important to God. That's a dangerous leap, that we ought to probably avoid. And there was one thing I just didn't have time to fit into the lesson that I wanted to say. And I think it would have been helpful for people to some degree or another, but I just didn't get to it. Was the reality is there are five talent people that waste them like the one talent person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are two talent people that waste them like the one talent person. Like the Jesus, I think, was making a point where the investment was heavy, and so this person, you know, took it and ran with it, and the guy with the one, you know, kind of made a little bit of a play about, well, maybe I wasn't invested in enough, and so I think I'm getting used and all that kind of thing. Like, but there are five talent people that bury him, and there are one talent people that double. Mm-hmm. So like, I mean, you know, we have to be really careful that we don't take that message too far and say it's only the five talent people that double their investment and the one talent people screw it up. Quite often that's not true in our world. And I think to say that would be to say that something more than Jesus was saying. So I think those two pieces there, like we have to be really careful about not overvaluing what our culture values versus what God values. And number two, the reality that sometimes five talent people waste it and one talent people double it is something we have to take into consideration as well.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to remember that the fact that they were given different talents, one got five, one got two, one got one, doesn't mean that they were less valuable as individuals in right. the eyes of the master.
Yeah.
Okay. He had a perception of
their ability.
Of their ability. Yeah. That's all.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they weren't important or that they weren't valued. They were all servants. I mean,
right.
you know, he didn't get rid of any of them.
Right. Until the end.
Until the end. And then, yeah. And then, you know, there's a performance orientation in there.
Jesus, extreme performance evaluation.
Oh, right. Man. Yeah. Yeah.
And to answer that question even, something else I was kind of thinking of was, like your question of why does this touch a nerve with people type thing is...
Right.
Is pride and jealousy.
Right. Like, oh, absolutely.
That we, like, the pride in the sense of, like, no, I'm capable of just as much, you know, or, like, I have just as much talent, or I, you know, right. Like, or the jealousy of, like, I want that much, right. You know, like, and you even touched on that, which I thought was really, really good. You said the guy with two did not compare himself to the guy with five.
Right.
That he went and he doubled his investment. He didn't care that the other person had more, that he just went out and did what he was supposed to do with
right.
it. That eliminates that. That's how we're supposed to respond to what we have. Don't worry about what somebody else has. Let's work with what we do have
right.
and allow us to bless the kingdom of God through that and allow God to bless us in return.
You know, just kind of a graphic example of that is, you know, one of the cool things that I get to do here is lead the band. And I've had the opportunity to be a part of a lot of really fun performances, really cool performances. And the reality is there are people on that stage way more talented than me, you know, and I get that. I'm not sad about that. I'm not frustrated about that. I mean, certainly there's a human part of you, man, I'd love to sound like that. You know, like yeah. there is that human part of you, but I remember one time we did a recording a few years ago of our own music. And we wrote all this stuff up and we prepared it. And I remember before we were going to record that night, I sat down in my backyard and was just kind of doing some journaling and, you know, there was kind of a moment where, you know, I'd heard my own voice recorded before. And if you've ever heard that, it's a terrible experience. Like when, you know, hearing your own recorded voice is not fun. Nobody likes it. Nobody likes it. And yet. I remember kind of thinking through that and thinking, man, you know, God, I wish I could just sound a little bit better for this performance, or what I wish I could sound the way I want to sound, you know, like, and I remember him very clearly saying to me in that moment, he said, like I was journaling and I remember writing it down, you know, like sing your song. You don't have to sound like, you know, Michael Tate from DC Talk, or, you know, some of these other great singers. You don't have to sing like them. You don't have to sound like them. You sing your song and that'll be enough. And that's, I've recalled that on a few occasions. You know, we have to be mindful of, because we all trend toward, oh, I wish I had that, or I wish I sounded like that, or I wish I had that experience or that money or this or that. And I think there's always that call from God. You sing the song I gave you. You use the money I gave you. You use the talent I gave you. You know, and if it's not theirs, then fine. Then, you know, like, just, but use yours. I think that's important for us to remember in the moment.
Well, and I think I made the comment earlier, there's a performance evaluation. I think we do need to be somewhat careful about that, because, you know, in the illustration that Jesus used, the five and the two talent guys doubled theirs. Okay. Right. But I think the problem with the one talent guy was that he did nothing.
He didn't try.
He didn't even make an attempt.
Right.
You know, and I wonder if the two talent guy had gone out there and worked really hard, but had only gotten it to three instead of doubling.
Right.
Or had maybe even taken a risk, a calculated risk, and maybe lost some.
Right.
At least he was trying.
Right.
You know, but the one talent guy, all he had was disdain for the master.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really vocal about it. And you know, you sit back and you think where he said you reap where you don't sow and you do this, and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, he's the master.
Mm-hmm.
It's his land.
He buys the seed.
Yeah.
All you have to do as a servant is go out and plant it. So don't talk about the fact that he harvests what he doesn't plant. That's why he hired you.
Right.
You know? He gave you a job.
Right.
So get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think even the message is an issue of the heart, right?
Like, oh man, it's big time.
It's not just simply how well you do at something, but it's how well you try and where your heart's at in that. And it's the one talent guy. His heart obviously was not where it needed to be. And even though he protected what he had, he didn't utilize what God gave him. And so it's issue of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think one of the walkaways from that particular deal is, you know, this guy obviously looked at the master and complained about what he didn't have and the experiences that he didn't have and the investment that he didn't have, and he didn't use the investment he did receive. And that's one thing that I think we as Christians have to be very careful about, is that we don't waste what God has given us, and that we don't bury the talent, whatever it may be, whatever you may have. I mean, I think a lot of us, we get to this place where it's real easy to see what we don't have, and we stop looking at what we do, and we don't see the potential impact of what is within us. Mm-hmm. And God gave you the personality and the experiences and the investment financially and the job experiences and the people around you that you have, because he intended for there to be a return out of that. And we have to be really careful not to go burying that talent, because ultimately, I mean, we're talking about an eternal game here. I mean, this is the ultimate infinite game, so to speak, and at the end of it, we will be called into account for what we did with what we had, not what we did with what we didn't have. You know, the one talent guy was not condemned for the fact that he didn't bring back 10.
Mm-hmm.
He was simply condemned for what he didn't do with his one. And that's an important message, you know, because I think we can get overawed with super talented people, you know, and forget that God holds the less talented and the less, you know, worldly capable to a similar standard. And I don't think in our world that's taken into account very much.
Yeah, you know, I think there's another element to this as well. And that's, we have to remember where all that talent, those talents that we've been given, where they came from.
Right.
Okay, and we're expected to use them to benefit the master. So if I'm a five-talent guy and I turn around and I reproduce 10 talents, but it was all for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like I, you know, let's say God gave me a tremendous gift in business, and all I ever did with that gift was use it to increase my own personal wealth, my own personal prestige. I got on the cover of Fortune magazine and Fast Company, and that's all it was. That's a problem.
Right.
Okay. Because I was given those talents by the master, and I'm expected to use them in a way that benefits his kingdom, not just my own. Right. And that's where I think a lot of people can get off track. I see people here at Good News Gathering that have fabulous talent and ability that they use in the marketplace week in and week out, and they sit in a seat here. And it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's a distortion of what God expects of us.
Right.
Okay. He does expect us to advance his kingdom with the talent that we have. Now, that doesn't mean everybody has to go into ministry, what we would term, you know, full-time vocational ministry. Yeah, we need people in business, and we need people in law, and we need people in medicine, and all the other professions and you know, labor that's out there. We need people and all those things. But they also have to use that talent to advance God's kingdom in some way, shape, or form.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's an important point. That's an important point because the reality is the five and two talent guys, they had a humility about them.
Oh, man.
That was obvious, you know, and the phrase you entrusted me and here it is. Mm-hmm. I've gotten you more than what you gave me. Was obvious, you know, had that been, I would have been interested had Jesus made one of those guys arrogant about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would his response have been? I think we can probably see from other statements that he's made that had they, you know, gone out and used it and worked the heck out of it and gotten a whole lot more and then spent it on themselves. You know, well, I think the parable of the rich fool, right? You know, built the barn.
Sure.
And you fool, tonight your very life will be demanded of you, and then who will get what you stored up for yourself? You know, somebody else. I think that's an important walk away there.
Well, mm-hmm. That's such a mentality like that we see in culture, right? Like, you know, I've built this up. Like, I've worked hard to create this. I've worked hard to build up my finances. Like, I've done this. And it's, well, who gave you that work ethic?
Right.
There have been hundreds of thousands of millions of people raised the same way that you were raised, taught the same lessons you were taught. They don't have the same work ethic. Who blessed you with that work ethic?
Right.
That came from God. Right. Like, mm-hmm. like, you owe your work ethic to him. Therefore, you owe your talents, your gifts, right. your finances, you owe it to him. Like, right. There's nothing that we have that hasn't come from him.
Right. Well, and I think one of the things that's been lost in our culture is the sense of how blessed we are. You know, I mean, you think about it, we read some older documents in the course of like preparing for one of those, you know, erasing history lessons. And you read some of these older American writers, and they consistently, even it's even in the founding documents of our nation, this term providence,
mm-hmm.
right? They use the term providence for God. And basically that term has at its core this idea that God is providing,
mm-hmm.
you know, to us for the benefit of others and for the benefit of his kingdom and all this kind of, like, but that term providence for God is an indicator that basically everything we have is a result of some seed he has sown in our lives, to kind of go back to the parable of the talents there. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we are but users of what he has clearly given us. And I think in our culture, because we are so striving to create for ourselves, we very readily and very easily take credit for that which we didn't earn. You know, I take credit for my abilities. I take credit for my skills. And a lot of the time, I mean, that is born out of, like you mentioned, Adam, the way I've been raised, mm-hmm. right? Well, that doesn't come back to me.
No.
That comes back to the people that were before me.
No.
You know, my talents and abilities, some of that's genetic, didn't choose any of that, you know? I'm not saying that there is no amount of effort that plays a major role in, mm-hmm. in our ability to succeed in a particular area or another. I certainly think it does. And God certainly does, both, judge and, you know, reward those who make effort on his behalf or don't make effort on his behalf, respectively. But I think to some degree or another, we often take credit for that, which we don't actually deserve it.
Well, and I think some of that is an extension of how our country was founded and how it grew up. There was such a heavy emphasis on you know, the individual coming to the new world and making making a new life for themselves. And so that whole individualism and work ethic has, you know, we refer to it as the Puritan work ethic,
right?
Because that was kind of built into us, and it kind of put its stamp on America in its early days. And so that idea of I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps,
right?
That's something that in it has good aspects to it, because it is good to have a good work ethic. It is good to be willing to work hard and to make something of yourself and of what you have and to use the gifts and talents that you have. But we can take that too far,
right?
And we can begin to believe that it's really all about me and what I've done, and it's all what I've done.
And it's also arrogance in the sense of, like, you aren't the only one who works hard.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people out there who are very less fortunate who are crazy hard workers.
Yeah,
I mean, think about a lot of the little podunk farmers, and I say that because I come from that family. My dad is a podunk farmer, and there's nobody I know who works harder than him, but he has little. But the thing is that he does a lot with the little that he has, and it's arrogant to think that you're the only one working hard. Therefore, that's why I have these things. You know, like, there are tons of people out there with very little who are working extremely hard every single day.
Mm-hmm. You know, what that you reminded me of something that I saw when I was in Haiti. And of course, you're in one of the poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere. But the route that we go to get from Port-au-Prince to the mission that we serve at, there is a quarry right by the road, and it's some kind of, I don't even know what kind of stone it is, but it's real white in color, and they make gravel out of it. And the most interesting thing is I saw a guy making gravel. He must have been the most muscular Haitian I've ever seen because he was making it with a sledgehammer. Hmm. He was up there on the side of this hill pounding that stuff into little rocks. And I'm sitting there thinking, that's that guy's job.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smokes.
To hand make gravel.
I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. Right. And it's 95 degrees out, you know? Yeah. Oh, my word.
Bringing up missions, that's a good point. Like, I mean, if you think you're a hard worker, go on a missions trip and see some of the people and how they have to live, what they have to do to survive. And you'll realize, wow, I actually need to step my game up a little bit.
You know? I got it like, pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Come to work in air conditioning, not a bad gig.
Yeah.
Providence.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, guys, as we wrap up, there's a lot on the deck as far as activity here at G&G over the course of the next few weeks. This coming Saturday, we have the Hillsborough Not As Usual project from 12 to 3 in the afternoon. We'll be working in Ward 3 doing some leaf raking, also doing some pretty intentional passing out of roots cards and invitations. Really would like to have everybody involved in that. The following Saturday is the Fall Clean on October 27th, and pretty much all morning long we'll be here cleaning up the ministry center in an attempt to get everything ready before Roots. As mentioned earlier, we continue to be involved in the church-wide radical life group study, so we would encourage you guys to continue with your groups. And if you haven't gotten into a group and you're interested in getting one, just call the church office and maybe we can get you set up. Roots is coming up on November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. We have four different service opportunities for you to come and take part of Roots, but we also have a number of service opportunities around Roots. So if you have the chance to come and serve as well as attend a Roots service, we would really appreciate anybody who is willing to do that. And if you have a desire to get involved in some way, you can always contact us at the church office and let us know that you're interested, and we'll get you in in contact with somebody who can get you involved. The other thing that we launched this past Sunday, and something that we would really like for all of you to be involved in, is what we're calling the Pre-Roots Intentional Acts of Kindness Project. And want to just to give you guys a quick plug on that. The idea here is to combine a service with an invitation, and to as a church try to do at least 250 of these, where we both serve an individual and invite them to Roots, and our goal is again to hit 250 of those, in the hope that there will be many in our community who are not only invited to Roots but are served in some significant way, in the hope that that will maybe perhaps not only drive their interest in coming to Roots but also just be a way of making a positive difference in our community as we prepare for Roots. So there are a couple different, or there are loads of different ways for you guys to get involved in doing that. And there are a few different ways of reporting that you have done that, so that we can see how we're doing against our goal here. If you guys have an opportunity, you can drop it on a communication card in the back. You don't even have to put your name on it. Just say, hey, I did a Roots kindness this week, and however many of those that you did. Or there is the poll that we put up on our GNG Facebook page, and there's a link to that. Again, it's an anonymous thing. It's a one question thing. How many acts of Roots kindness, both service and invitation, did you do this week? And you just put in a number and that's it. So, would really appreciate you guys getting involved in that, because we believe that this Roots has the opportunity to make a massive impact on our community, not just through music, but through, acts of service and kindness and invitation. So we would love for you guys to get involved with that. We hope you guys have a great week. We thank you to our listener who sent us in some comments, and we are excited to respond to any comments or questions that may come in. So you can always put those on a communication card or send in an email to info@goodnewsgathering.org. Guys, we hope you have a great week, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. Take care and have a good one.
Have a good week, everybody.
Have a good one.